If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
30.
All right, so I'm here.
Oh, hi.
You can verify that I am here.
You are here.
I'm in good shape to do the show. I'm ready to go.
Well, that's nice to know.
That's good.
Well, I mentioned this for a reason. Because I was at a restaurant last night. I was at dinner. You ever go to that Cistadilla Greek restaurant?
Oh, yeah.
In Lincolnwood?
I have.
It's a good joint. Really good. So I'm waiting in line because, you know, it's Saturday night. It's busy, you know, waiting for a table.
They don't take reservations.
They do not take reservations, no. But you get in, you know, fairly quickly. I didn't wait that long. But while I'm waiting, people are saying hello to me. They recognize, you know, me from the morning show. But like three people said, don't live it up too much tonight because I'm going to be listening tomorrow morning.
Oh. So when in the course of living it up during the restaurant, what was the entree for you?
Oh, choice I had some fantastic lamb chops.
Sounds good.
Delicious. A nice Greek village salad and some nice lamb chops. What else? No, that's all I had.
Well, that was...
I didn't even have an alcoholic beverage.
No, that was... Yeah, okay.
I had iced tea.
You went light. That's good.
Yeah.
Good.
But I like that the listeners are checking me.
Did they text in already saying, are you there yet?
I haven't seen the text line.
Oh, okay.
They're like... People telling me don't have too good of a time because we're going to be listening tomorrow morning.
That's funny.
Or if you just kind of didn't show, you know, they would know why.
Yeah.
But, okay. Well, nice that you had a very nice evening and
a nice
dinner.
What did you do last night?
Nothing.
Come on.
No, really, nothing. I caught up on the evening news in preparation for my duties here.
And your stamp collection.
And that was it. That was it.
What did you do last night, Andy?
Malina and I went out to dinner. We met her her cousin out in Northfield, up at the lovely Hap Inn.
Oh, that's a good place.
Yeah, we were up there for a little while. And then I had to hightail it down to Channel 9. I was doing GN Sports last night with Chris Bowden.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you also couldn't really have a good time.
No, I had a Diet Coke at dinner while everybody else had drinks.
Boozing it up.
Yeah. It's okay.
All right.
It's part of my damp January.
Semi-moist.
Yeah, exactly.
Semi-moist sounds a little weird, but
yeah, it does, doesn't it?
That as it may. Yeah.
Leave it at that. Just leave it at that.
I'm having a semi-moist January. January 26, 1986. 39 years ago today, the Bears win Super Bowl 20. Show of hands, everybody who remembers exactly what they were doing that night.
I have my hand in the air.
Me too. What were you doing, Chwani?
Well,
nothing.
No, that's not true.
Checking my stamp collection.
It's not true. Not true. Let's go back to the mid-1980s before what we now know are big screen TVs being standard. My friend.
Did you go to a Polk Brothers store and watch the game?
No. My friend's Christmas present to his family was renting one of the great big screens.
What?
Remember those big
projections?
Projection screens. His Christmas present to the family was renting a screen like that so we could watch the playoffs and eventually the Super Bowl.
And those things looked awful, too. Right?
Yeah.
Remember the picture?
And I was invited to the house for a party and watched the game. And then this was out in Northwest Indiana. And then I came back in to the city and stayed out all night covering the celebrations that were everywhere.
The craziness.
It was really one of the highlights of anything I've done in this business. Yeah. It was just
great.
Oh, I remember remember back like in the really old days where I used to do the lottery drawings?
Yeah.
I first started doing the lottery drawings on Channel 32.
Huh.
So I was over there getting ready for the big lottery broadcast because for some reason we had to have a rehearsal first because we haven't done it a million times. But they would do a rehearsal every night. So we sat around. There were like four of us that sat around all night. We watched the game over there. And the streets were desolate.
You know what? I was just about to say that. There was noticeably no traffic on the streets.
Not a person on the street before the game. After the game, as you say, it was pandemonium in the streets. Crazy.
Oh, and the day after. Just the other day, I was telling somebody for the victory parade the following day, the bus with the players in it couldn't get through on LaSalle Street because there were so many people in the street.
Wasn't it like ridiculously cold?
Very cold. Very cold. Yes.
Like dangerous cold?
Yeah. It was almost like it was the first couple of days of this past week. Yeah. Monday, Tuesday. It was super cold.
Were you covering the game back then or were you just a kid?
I was a kid. I was winter break at Bradley was just about to end, but it still had a few days. But a bunch of us went back down to school so we could watch it together, and that's what we did. Freshman year at Bradley was watching the Super Bowl. I remember driving down there with in my mom's car. We had a bunch of bumper stickers on the car with beer Woo-hoo. Stuff. People were honking as I was driving down 55, and it was cool. And the weirdest thing about the whole experience was Dick Enberg was calling the game on NBC with Merlin Olsen. And like
Merlin Olsen.
Yeah, like 25.
Boy, there's some names I haven't heard in a while.
And like 25 years later, I would end up working with Dick Enberg with the Padres in San Diego. It was the weirdest thing.
That's amazing.
So to watch him talk and go, hey, you called the only Super Bowl I've ever seen a Bears team win.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was an amazing. I remember Fridge, William the Fridge Perry getting a touchdown.
There were people that were
disappointed. Remember Walter Payton not getting
one? Yeah, I was just going to say that people were disappointed that Walter did not get a touchdown.
And he was disappointed, too. I mean, if you go back and you look at the coverage from after that game, you know, Walter wasn't front and center. He was not happy. Obviously, this was a team game, and he was ecstatic that the Bears finally won the Super Bowl. But, you know, he didn't get a touch near the goal line, and they tried to get it to him toward the end of the game, and was unable to do so, but I think that's the only thing that didn't go right in that Super Bowl.
The disappointment of
that's the only thing.
Yeah, yeah. The Super Bowl Shuffle song was phenomenal.
Yep.
It had got up to number 41 on the national Billboard Hot 100 charts.
Oh yeah.
So it was a hit. Around the country.
Yep.
It sold 500,000 copies. What else did I learn about this morning? I learned that the Bears were the second sports team to have their own music video after the 1985 Seattle Seahawks did one the year before. The song was nominated for a Grammy Award for the best R&B performance.
How about that?
By a duo or group. It lost to Prince, the song Kiss by Prince.
Well, if you're going to lose to Prince, right?
Lose to Prince, exactly right. The song, let me see here, I was trying to find the name of the people who owned the rights to the song. There were $300,000 in profits from the song in the music video that went to the Chicago Community Trust to help Chicago families in need of clothing, shelter, and food. And as we just heard Walter say in the song, we're not doing this because we're greedy.
The Bears are doing it to feed the needy.
Yeah. But later on, there were some issues about where the money was going.
Oh.
And there was a lawsuit. Six of the players. Richard Dent, Jim McMahon, Otis Wilson, Willie Gault, Mike Richardson, and Steve Fuller sued the owners of the rights of the song, stating that a constructive trust be established for charitable purposes for future profits from the song.
Interesting.
Was taped at the video. The famous video was taped at the Park West the morning after the Bears only lost that season.
And, you know, you can tell that for one thing. If you're a real sleuth of Chicago Bears football and you remember in that game, Jim McMahon did not start. Steve Fuller went in and injured his ankle in that game. And if you watch very closely on the video, the ankle that he injured, the socks that he has on are much lower on that ankle than they are on the other.
Really?
Yeah, because he couldn't move. He had a really badly sprained ankle.
For Steve Fuller?
Yeah.
I want to go back and look at his socks now.
So his socks are a little bit lower on that ankle that was injured.
Huh.
Yeah.
Here's something else I never knew about this video. Jim McMahon and Walter Payton were not part of the recording of the video.
No, they both were not there. You can tell, and they were kind of superimposed over it.
Yeah.
Both of those guys, the punky QB known as McMahon.
They refused to participate in the video shoot, thinking that it would be better to release the song and video after the season was complete. But somehow they were convinced to go ahead and do it. So Payton and McMahon filmed their segments separately a week after the group video was shot, and then they were electronically inserted into the whole thing. I never knew that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it does have that weird...
That old 80s super imposition, yeah.
Special effects kind of look to the whole thing. And here's another thing I didn't know. Dan Hampton declined involvement.
He did.
In the shuffle. According to Wikipedia, he thought it was too arrogant.
Yeah, Dan is, as you've come to know over the years here at WGN Radio, was pretty serious about his craft and didn't want to have a video do the talking. He wanted the Bears play to do the talking.
Yeah. Never knew that.
So, yeah, he didn't. He did not take part.
That's why we have never released a Sunday morning shuffle video for this show. Schwani refuses to appear in it.
He doesn't want to be arrogant.
I was never asked.
And I feel like if Schwani's not going to be in the video, then we can't
I was never asked. It's just like everything else.
We are
else.
The Sunday morning crew.
Shuffling on down. Doing it for you.
Yeah.
Here we go. Can worms opened.
There is another anniversary today.
Okay.
Another anniversary.
Yes, I remember that
is Chicago for those of us of a certain age that would remember January 26th,
which means old people.
I didn't say that, but on January 20th, today is the 58th anniversary of the beginning of what we will still always remember as the big snow.
The big snow.
Over 23 inches between January 26th and 27th of 1967. Never forget that either.
My poor mom was pregnant with me.
Really?
Oh, my.
<Yes. laughs> I was born in May of that year.
Really?
Yeah.
I made so much money that year shoveling snow.
I think it took my dad and I 2 days to shovel our driveway. Yeah. And when we finally made it to the street, everybody else was doing the same thing, and we're like waving like we had, you know, just broken out of some sort of
all you could do. I mean, think
confinement.
About this. 2 feet of snow fell. 2 feet of snow fell in one storm, and that's not even counting drifts and things like that.
4 and 6 foot drifts.
Yeah.
We had them in our driveway.
So all you know, you would shuffle a path to someplace, but it was, you couldn't even move. You couldn't walk. You couldn't do anything. The food trucks couldn't get to the stores.
Nope.
There was a shortage of food. If you were able to get, we had to use my sled to get to the grocery store to try to get bread and milk.
Yeah. And there was a storm a few weeks later, not a few days later, but about a month later, that got everybody all, you know, concerned and excited, and everybody making a run on the store thinking, here we go again. And the storm turned out to be, you know, nothing significant at all. Certainly not like January 26th and 27th, but
the big snow.
Yeah, ordinarily my dad would get home from work in about a half hour. It was over 3.5 hours that night. And keep in mind, no cell phones, no communication. So right, right. We did not know, you know, what the status was.
I remember just being at home watching Harry Volkman.
Harry Volkman, yes.
You know, tell us about the storm. That's all you did was sit around and watch it. Then we got out there with the shovels and cleaned our house. And I made a killing shoveling our neighbor's snow. But now that I think of it, I mean, you know, I thought it was a killing then. But I would shovel somebody's snow, 2 feet of snow, clear their walkways, blah, blah, blah. Like for a quarter.
For a quarter or 50 cents. Yeah.
Thanks for the slave labor, Dean.
See, now 12 years later.
And what record did you buy with the money that you made?
I'm sure that's where the money went.
Yes.
So now 12 years later, my brother and I made a little killing doing shoveling
snow. 79.
Yeah.
We were out of school for 2 weeks, and that's the one I remember the most. And it was two separate storms, separated by like a negative 13 in between.
Yeah.
And then another big storm at the end of December.
I was working at WFYR for that storm, fire radio. and the managers did not want us to go home because they were afraid that we wouldn't be able to get back again, which was true. So they put us up in the Hyatt right next door here.
Oh, yeah.
With an unlimited expense account.
Oh, goodness.
Oh.
So
happy fun. DJs. Happy, happy DJs.
We were happy, happy DJs.
And it showed on your next broadcast.
Crazy. All right, just to put it all into perspective with the Super Bowl, where were you that night? What were you doing? Super Bowl shuffle. Right before the show, producer Jack, as we call him, Jack Hammer, walks in the room, sees that I've got the Super Bowl shuffle ready to go. And what did you say, Jack?
That was 11 years before I was born.
And then you promptly kicked him out of the room, right?
I did. 11 years before he was born. Wow. All right. Any more memories? Anything else to depress me? No, I think that's about it. It's time once again for America's favorite, the far-flung forecast. Yes, it's our week. What? What?
You just sound like one of those great old-time announcers.
Well,
yes, the old clock on the wall.
Let me tell you
that. Good morning, Radio Land.
Time for the far-flung forecast. Here he is now.
Your cordial host.
Okay, Swanee, take it away.
Thank you very much, Dean. Good morning, everyone. And get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices. We're headed over to a well-known city, Buffalo, New York, today. New York,
which you didn't make up.
No, I didn't have to make it up. With a population of over 250,000 people, second most populous city in New York State after some other place called New York City. But Buffalo, New York is right on Lake Erie, and in the turn of the 20th century was a very important shipping and grain port. They had flour mills and was also the western terminus of the Erie Canal.
Terminus.
Where things were moving back and forth between the Great Lakes. And that brings us to the point of our story as to why we bring up Buffalo, New York. Because last week, a 663-foot freighter from Canada named the Manitoulin dropped off a load of wheat in Buffalo along the Lake Erie shoreline and then began to head west back toward Michigan and Canada. And it got stuck in the ice.
Uh-oh.
It had been there for 4 days, And yesterday, the boat was finally freed from the ice, which in some places was 3 to 4 feet thick on Lake Erie. And the ice cutters that move along the Great Lakes were able to get the boat moving around 7 knots or so, which is about 8 miles an hour. But that's pretty good movement for a ship that big. And I'll tell you, when you see these freighters up close, they look big on the Great Lakes. You know, you see them from time to time here in Lake Michigan.
They're gigantic.
When you get next to them, they are overwhelming.
I'm surprised it wasn't able to smash through the ice.
It couldn't. It got stuck, and just it doesn't have the capability to cut through the ice like the ice cutters do that actually have, you know, blades and the force to be able to move through
being
it.
Being so massive, though.
You'd think they'd be able to, simply because of the weight. Yeah, but
I was wondering that because I was looking out on the Chicago River. No comparison, but the river is, the top of the river is frozen.
Yeah.
And it looks like a glazed donut to me.
That sounds good right about now, doesn't it?
Donuts.
But good news, all of the 17 crew members are fine. No one was, no health problems. You know, for 4 days, though, they were stranded out there and caused quite a sight from Buffalo, New York. But happy to report that the Manitoulin is moving back to its destination. And Buffalo, New York is partly sunny with 30 degrees today.
941. Good Sunday morning to you, Dean Richards. Time for the Weekend Health. Our look at keeping you as healthy as possible every week. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Director of Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital, joining us as always. Doctor, good morning to you, my friend. I hope you're keeping warm.
Good morning, Dean. Yeah, certainly. I've got the heat going at the moment.
It is, you know, one of those weeks where seems like all I heard about were people coming down with, I don't know what it, I don't know if it's the neurovirus that we've heard of, or people getting COVID, or just colds, or what the deal is. But this is that time of year where just everybody is sick, sick, and more sick.
It is miserable. And they've got a fancy name for it. Excuse me. You can tell I'm on the tail end of something, but they're calling it the quad-demic, meaning the four circulating viruses, that being flu, COVID, RSV, and norovirus. And, you know, some of the symptoms just overlap with all of them, so it may not be clear what you've got, but you definitely don't feel good.
So how do you determine what you've got and what you should do? Should you contact doctors or just, you know, a lot of times with these kind of things, you just have to wait it out, right?
For the most part, most folks, you know, are going to wait it out. I would say, with the exception of people, particularly folks that are on chemo for cancer or some sort of immune suppressant. When you get a fever, you definitely want to check in with your physician, and those folks typically know that. But like you say, the symptoms can be so sort of generic, a sore throat or fatigue, headache, stuffy or runny nose, a cough, or just your body just doesn't feel good. Something we call malaise in the medical profession. You know, all of those could be symptoms, certainly of COVID or flu. You know, RSV, the respiratory syncytial virus, tends to be more of a very specific to the nose and throat, so runny nose and a cough. But the norovirus, that's, you know, kind of stands on its own. You're talking about real bad pains in your belly and the diarrhea and the vomiting, of course.
So I've heard people talking about stomach flu-like symptoms. Is that part of this quad-demic thing that you're talking about?
It certainly can be. And, you know, the norovirus is notorious for it's what that is essentially when we say the stomach flu, that's the main culprit for causes of the stomach flu. And I'll just repeat again, I know we've talked about this previously, but the hand sanitizer, the alcohol based hand sanitizer does not get rid of it. You've got to use soap and water. furthermore, soap and water doesn't kill it. It just washes it away. So if you really want to disinfect your house, you want to be using bleach-based products, either bleach wipes or a weak bleach solution.
Wow. I mentioned this last week. It sounds like a sci-fi movie of the virus that won't die, that you wash it down the sink and it goes someplace else, only to find another victim.
They are nasty, Dean. They are very, very nasty. And I think the thing that I would say about it is, you know, the whole goal with a stomach flu, whether it's norovirus or some other virus, the actual virus itself matters less than the care for the person. And that is trying to keep up with what's going out. You want it to go back in. So, you know, for every episode of running to the bathroom, you want to be drinking, you know, 8 ounces of liquid, essentially. That could be water or Gatorade or tea or, ginger ale. Those are all great ways to kind of replenish.
Yeah. Is one better than another? I've heard pluses and minuses about the sports drinks, because they replenish, necessary, nutrients, that one needs. But, are you just as good with a glass of water as you are a Gatorade?
Yeah, I'll usually go kind of one for two. So I'll drink 2 glasses of water. And if I'm really, really sick, you know, with constant trips to the bathroom, as I mentioned, you know, I'll throw in a glass of Gatorade just to help with those electrolytes. You don't want to be drinking gallons of water. That can get you into trouble, paradoxically. Too much water actually can be a bad thing, but really too much of anything is a bad thing. So I think just mix it up. There's no magic formula to it, but it's good to have a little bit of both, a little bit of electrolytes and a little bit of water.
Now, here's how crazy I am. When I get sick, somehow I think that if I drink grapefruit juice, that I'm doing my body a big favor, because anything that tastes that bad has to be good for you.
You have to be careful with grapefruit juice, and I'm really glad you brought that up.
Oh, I just thought it was a quirky thing with me.
No. It's a great way to hydrate the body. However, grapefruit juice specifically interferes with a number of medications.
Wow,
and can actually cause lethal buildup of certain medicines. And there's so many I can't name them all. I would just say that if you're thinking about drinking grapefruit juice and you're on medication of any kind, either Google it or talk to your doctor, because it may be dangerous for you.
Wow. Okay. All right. Wow. It turns out my little quirky thing actually is something potentially. I thought I was helping myself. It turns out I was putting myself in jeopardy. A quick break, and we're coming right back with Dr. Jeremy Silver. If you've got questions, comments, you can call or text 312-981-7200. All right, we are back, 9:51, Dean Richards, 720 WGN. Dr. Silver, during the break, sent me a link of drugs that do not play well with grapefruit juice. And wow, doctor, you are right. That is a formidable list that we've got here.
And there's also some fairly common drugs there, so it's certainly good to take a look at.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, we'll post this so people can take a look at it, because it would take the rest of the show to list all of these. But there are statins are listed here, cholesterol drugs, blood pressure drugs, anti-anxiety drugs. I mean, there's a lot. There is definitely a lot. So bye-bye grapefruit juice. Hello, cranberry juice, I think, for me.
Maybe a good switch to make.
Might be a good one. Let's go to Jim at 720 WGN. Hi, Jim. You're on with Dr. Silver.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thanks for being here every weekend, Doc. I appreciate your perspective on everything. I am a pharmacist, and I'm curious on your position on probiotics, because I think in this day and age of the quad viruses that are going around, probiotics are really helpful, but the right ones.
What's your take on those?
Jim, great point to make, and I think probably I'm in your camp in the sense that I think many healthcare providers are underutilizing these medications. And I'd actually be curious from a pharmacist perspective if there's, you know, specific formulations that you like better than others. We tend to kind of go, you know, just go generic in our discharge instructions. But I will almost uniformly send patients home with probiotics when I'm putting them on antibiotics. But that's a great thought for using them in the setting of a virus.
I think it's important to get the probiotics that are kept in the refrigerator at the pharmacies, not the ones that are sitting out in front, because obviously the preservation of the potency is much better, and those seem to give us good effects. I mean, I personally have been taking probiotics a long time, and they've done a really good job of not totally preventing some of these virus things from going through you, but keeping them to a minimum. You know, instead of being down 3 or 4 times a winter, you're maybe down once a winter, or maybe none. So I think that's really important, but you got to get the right ones. You don't buy the ones that are the over-the-counter that are sitting out there. You got to buy the ones that Florigen is the biggest one that's used out of the refrigerator in the pharmacies. There's others that you can order online, and they ship them to you frozen or whatever, or with frozen packaging or whatever.
So dry ice. Do you need prescriptions for these, Dr. Silver?
No. Oh, sorry. No, you do not.
No, he's correct that you don't. Yep.
Absolutely. Sorry, I didn't mean to step on you guys.
It's okay.
No, go ahead.
No, that's okay. If I was just wondering if they're behind the counter and refrigerated, if you needed, you just go to the pharmacy and say, that's what I want to get?
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
Okay. And
they cost some money. I mean, they're probably $30 a bottle, which is it's a dollar a day, but, important to take my perspective on this. You take them at bedtime so that capsule sits in that gut overnight. You get maximum absorption from that. And it just seems to do finally get great results for patients all the time.
Yeah. Now, aren't probiotics found in yogurt and other natural sources as well, Dr. Silver?
They can be. Yes. Certain yogurts, with acne, they usually say on the packaging with active cultures, and I think most yogurt today has gone that route. So yes, it's definitely naturally occurring. The only caveat that I would make is that in some folks, you can get sort of derangements to the liver function tests. So if you are going to jump on the probiotic bandwagon, and I do think it's a good idea, make sure you're in concert with your doctor just to make sure that they're checking your basic chemistries.
Yeah, I think I would want to consult my doctor on that before I start to self-medicate. But, Jim, appreciate you bringing it up. Thank you very much. Dr. Silver, real quick, a text from the 708. I had a recent bout with COVID earlier this year that gave me lots of dizziness. Is that common with COVID? That's actually the first time that I've heard that with COVID, but I'm sure you know better.
I've seen a lot of inner ear stuff with COVID. And if you kind of think about COVID, how it enters through the nose and the mouth, and your ears are right there. And so I've seen quite a few people with ongoing disequilibrium, as they say, or even ringing in the ears. And so not all dizziness is the same. And this dizziness that this person is describing may be slightly different. But in terms of ear, nose, and throat type of symptoms, definitely something that we see.
Wow. We're learning all the time, aren't we, about COVID and things that it does and lasting effects and so forth. All these years later, we're still learning about it. Appreciate the information as always. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Go enjoy your probiotics, doctor, and we'll talk to you next time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, I'm always amazed what will blow up our text lines. And
you never know.
It turns out that we should focus this program more on digestion than anything else. Seems like our little conversation that we just had with Dr. Silver about probiotics and digestion.
What was this about grapefruit juice?
Well, that you shouldn't drink grapefruit juice with certain drugs that you're
taking. Oh, certain drugs. I've seen something like that. You can have a very bad reaction.
Yeah, we're going to post the link. Do you want me to send it to you?
Sure. Go right ahead.
I'll be happy to sell it to you if you'd like.
It's on a lot of the labels, too. You have to read those labels carefully.
Ah, labels.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I made the mistake one time. I was taking a statin for cholesterol. And I had a sip of orange juice, and my stomach was not right for about 2 hours after that.
Yeah, that's one of them. Statins in general, according to this link, which is the, I think it's a CDC site. But it says that there are certain drugs that you just should not take with grapefruit juice. And I always thought that because grapefruit juice is, you know, kind of nasty tasting, that the worse it tastes, the better it is for you.
Good thought. That's what I think about broccoli.
Yeah.
I had broccoli in a nice salad the other day.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
Carrots, broccoli.
That's nice.
I'm just trying to make conversation.
That's okay. I'm happy to hear what you eat.
You're talking about digestion?
That's going to be our new format on Sunday morning. It's the All Digestion Show.
Oh, boy, can that go places.
Probiotics in kefir and kombucha are good to drink.
Okay.
You ever have kombucha?
No.
No.
Not on purpose.
I've seen it in the store. It doesn't look that good. And isn't kefir just like liquid yogurt, basically?
Weren't we talking about kefir a few weeks ago?
Kefir Sutherland.
No.
Were we?
One of the oldest women.
I need to pay attention. But
there was a lady that lived in Japan in Asia, and one of her health secrets.
Yeah,
and I think that was something along those lines that she was drinking.
Here's another text, and I get all my medical advice from our text line. By the way, I got to be careful how I pronounce this because I'm not sure, but it's. It looks like chitonase.
Be nice. Be nice.
Chitonase is what it looks like. Is an ingredient that breaks down the shell of bad bacteria.
The shell of bad bacteria?
Yes. That's what this says.
Okay.
Here's a good one. I drink plain kefir with turmeric and black pepper every morning.
Is kefir, how do you spell this?
Well, people on the text line are spelling it K-E-F-I-R.
K-E-F. One F.
We've had some advertising from them, I think.
Kefir, here we are. Kefir milk, kefir grains, yogurt.
Yeah.
Kefir benefits. Kefir probiotic.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there you go. Be listening again next Sunday morning.
Here we are with the 1961 announcer for
far-flung forecast.
Be listening again.
A-list interviews and how to keep you running properly. I don't know how many of you say to me every week, Dean, we love the show, but you just don't play enough Marky Mark on the show.
That's with the Marky Funky Mark Bunch.
And the Funky Bunch.
Oh, yeah. I used to play that song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ad nauseam.
Feel it. Feel it. Tawani down on the newsroom floor doing his breakdancing routine.
And breaking my neck.
Good thing you brought that giant piece of cardboard in with you. Coming up later in the show, my conversation with Marky Mark. Marky Mark Wahlberg has got the new number one movie in America called Flight Risk. We'll get to that coming up a little bit later on today. What an amazing transformation that Marky Mark has had. I like to call him Marky Mark.
How's he react to that?
Not really too well. He likes to sort of put that behind him. Yeah. But think about that. I mean, he was a ruffian, right? From Boston. In trouble with the law. Got into music, had a fairly successful music career, and then transitioned to movies where he's an Oscar-nominated actor now, Mark Wahlberg. So, yeah, so he's got this new movie out. Guess who directed this new movie? My old pal, Mel Gibson.
Oh, you get along with him quite well.
I do now.
Oh, you're friends now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we have Christmas together. And...
You went to his house for Thanksgiving, right?
Went to the house for Thanksgiving. yeah, that was, we had that one little brief skirmish.
An encounter.
An encounter many years ago. That's you know, that's like 15 years ago or something now.
I was going to say, it's been a while. It's
been a long time, yeah, but we've, I've talked to him several times since. And we coo. We coo, as we people on the street like to say. So that's coming up a little while. So we're going to find out who goes to the Super Bowl today, right?
Yes, we are. The AFC and the NFC Championship game's coming up. Eagles and the Commanders for the NFC title.
I can't get used to calling Washington the Commanders.
I liked it better when they were just the Washington football team.
I think I like that better than the Commanders.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that would like it to go back to its original name.
The Redskins?
Yeah, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Commander sounds like a brand of underwear. Doesn't it?
Yeah, in some respect, I guess.
I'm wearing the Commanders today.
Hey, how you doing? How are your Commanders?
It's cold outside. Put on your Commanders.
Put on your long Commanders.
Got my thermal Commanders on today.
Oh, Lord. And then in the AFC Championship game today, Kansas City is going to host Buffalo. And
is that going to be an all-Chiefs game?
You know,
is Buffalo any good?
Buffalo's good. Yeah, yeah, Buffalo's good. And Buffalo has really struggled against Kansas City in the postseason. Josh Allen, the quarterback for the Buffalo Bills, is 0-3 in his career against Patrick Mahomes in playoff games, 0-2 in AFC title games. So they may want to. He's going to have a good showing. I have a feeling. And the weather is not going to be an issue in either ballpark apparently today. So should be precipitation free is what they're saying.
It's the over under on how many times they're going to show Taylor Swift.
Well, within what time frame? You know what I mean? I think it's one of those you have to.
Is that how they break it down now? Because they always show her so much.
And then I think there should probably be a prop to find out who she's going to be sitting with.
Oh, right.
Because last week she was sitting with Caitlin Clark, the WNBA star, who is a longtime Kansas City Chiefs fan.
Isn't she usually with, what's his name's mom?
Yeah, with Donna Kelsey.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's up there all the time, too. So never know who you might see. I mean, it's a who's who at these in her suite.
I'm going to predict that it's going to be the Eagles and the Chiefs.
Eagles and the Chiefs.
Going to the Super Bowl.
That would be a rematch of a couple of years ago.
Only because I don't want to pick a team whose name sounds like underwear to me.
Yeah. I think a lot of Bears fans are a little, I don't know if they're upset, but you know, the Commanders are led by the guy that was picked right after Caleb Williams in the draft. Jaden Daniels is their quarterback. And he's had a great year. And everybody that says to me, well, you know, maybe they should have drafted him, I tell them, well, this is what a rookie quarterback looks like when he has an offensive line to protect him and a guy that actually knows what he's doing calling plays.
Mm.
So that's, you know, considering what Caleb Williams went through and what he was able to actually accomplish, hopefully the skies are blue ahead here with Ben Johnson taking over.
What's your take on the Ben Johnson situation? Are you optimistic about that?
Yeah, I'm guardedly optimistic because we've seen a number of times in the National Football League where the hot coordinator, and Ben Johnson certainly was that this year, comes in and shows that he is a hot coordinator for a reason and can't command the entire football team. I don't think that's going to be the case just listening to Ben Johnson speak. But again, you don't want to win the offseason. You want to win the regular season and then the postseason. The Bears have won the offseason the last couple of years, and let's see what that has done for them. Not much.
I'm going to bring producer Jack, as we like to call him, Jack Hammer, into the conversation. He's now a famous sportscaster here.
Yes, he is.
On WGN.
I don't know about that.
He's, well, you're on actually quite a bit now, aren't you? Aren't you
Sometimes,
sports?
Yeah. Fill in when needed.
Yeah, I mean, your objective is to take Andy's job, right?
Not directly, no.
I just need a few more years, Jack. I just need a few more years.
Andy's been kind enough to help me out, give me some feedback. So Dean's trying to divide.
Yeah,
we're together.
Okay. We know the truth.
Andy, just be careful. I don't know if you ever saw the movie All About Eve.
No.
Where the the young
the upstart
comes in and they're like, "Oh, I just admire all the work that you do."
And then
all of a sudden, boom, you've got a knife in your back. Now, what's your take on this, Jack? You were shaking your head like crazy when I brought up Ben Johnson.
Yeah, because he's making me feel crazy. I think he's going to be great. That's the guy, for once, and I think Andy will agree, this is the guy that probably makes them feel a little uncomfortable because they had to pay him a lot more than they normally do.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of a swing they don't normally take. Normally, they go with the safe option, and this feels like a risk worth taking. And if you just look what he did with Jared Goff and in Detroit, and Caleb Williams, I think, is more talented. He's a little younger, too, so... I think it'll be good.
Somebody that knows what they're doing and calling plays and maybe using the running back in the right style as far as DeAndre Swift not running him up the middle. It was very frustrating, as you can imagine, Dean, watching games with Hampton OB.
Oh my gosh!
With these guys understanding more about football than Matt Eberflus will ever know in his life. I think OB's forgotten more about football than Matt Eberflus knows.
Oh yeah.
And it was just so frustrating to watch over and over and over and over. What's the definition of insanity, right?
Yeah.
Doing the same darn thing every time and expecting different results when you know what the result's going to be already. Yeah.
Shrani, doesn't it sound like Jack Hammer is, he wants to take over?
Oh, I think he's doing just fine.
I think he wants Ennett's job.
Oh, no.
He does a good job.
He's a very articulate young man.
He is.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's fun.
I love, you know, you should Jack. Just be He's Jack just, Sports with Jack Hammer. I can hear this. Ooh, I can see it.
Yeah.
I might have to change my social media names.
How hard is that?
Not hard at all.
No. Not the Hammer.
I've already got 7 or 8 different profiles myself.
I'll ask you for help.
Yeah. Yeah, Jack's the smartest guy on the show. I don't know if a lot
of people, I don't know about that.
I don't know. A lot of people know that. But my favorite thing about Jack Hammer, when Schwani and I start going off on her.
On Andy Griffith and Andy the Three Griffith. Stooges. Yeah.
Oh, right. 9 to 9:30 nap time?
Yeah, Jack is the only producer I've ever had that can actually roll his eyes all the way into the back of his head.
He's good at it. I've seen him do that, too, during Happen OB. Yeah.
Yeah. That's when I was listening to Eberflus's press conference.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, exactly. Wow. It's the truth.
I thought the big thing, Ben Johnson didn't sound like an idiot. It was refreshing.
He didn't. He sounded like he knew what he was doing.
I was inspired by him.
I liked his enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. When I heard him talking to the...
To all the workers at Hal's Hall.
Yeah. It was like, wow, look at that. An inspiring leader for a change.
Clear and confident. It was different.
And a Cubs fan.
Even better.
All right, well.
And just really, it sounded like a Chicago fan overall.
Yeah.
You know, because he mentioned that he and his family have gone to Cubs games regularly, but was just like, we love coming here. Yeah. So, yeah. I think it's all good. I really
do.
Does
he have local connections here? Is he just, a lot of people from other cities are Cubs fans, but I mean, does he have some sort of local connection that he would be a Cubs fan?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't think so.
He said in his press conference, he'd come home and watch them on WGN.
Back in the days,
up.
When you can actually watch games on TV.
Right. Mm-hmm. Not on a streaming app or whatnot.
What's a game on TV, Uncle Dean? Okay, well, let's hope. We've had enthusiastic chats.
Yes, we have.
About new people before. So, I'm following Jack's lead on all of this.
Jack, you're in control.
If Jack says it, that's good enough for me.
I like that.
It's a lot of pressure, Jack.
20?
No,
still awake?
No, I'm here. I'm here. I'm listening to this. Just thinking.
Somebody get the smelling salts for Schwani.
On WGN.
Another show. Opening night. It's opening night.
7. Time for the Week in Theater. What is going on stage in Chicago? It's a Chicago Theater Week. In just a moment, we'll talk with Marissa Lynn Jones, President and CEO of the League of Chicago Theaters. Real quick before we get to that, our theater calendar. A performance from the 2017 Tony Awards, Welcome to the Rock, the story of how what happened September 11th, 2001, when a plane was forced to land in a remote portion of Canada. The play is called Come From Away. And I think we got like 7 Tony nominations that year that it first came out. It is back in the Chicago area now through today, the final day, over at the CIBC Theater. Also on our theater calendar now, the Goodman Theater, putting a new spin on Hamlet with the Pulitzer Prize-winning Fat Ham. Through February 2nd, Chicago Shakespeare Theater is presenting the award-winning hit comedy Jaja's African Hair Braiding. And also today is the final day for the Chicago International Puppet Theater Festival. It's going on at various locations around town. As I say, today is the final day for that. I'd mentioned that the Chicago Theater Week begins today. And this is a phenomenal time to see great shows around the Chicago area at discount prices. We'll tell you all about that next. Carole King musical, Beautiful. Headed back to the Chicago area out at the Drury Lane. And it is one of the shows that you can check out with Chicago Theater Week, which is kicking off today. And Marissa Lynn Jones is the executive director for the League of Chicago Theaters. Marissa, thank you for joining us again. Welcome back to WGN. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. Really excited for these shows coming out.
Yeah, explain exactly what is Chicago Theater Week.
Chicago Theater Week is a time for you to get accessible price tickets at just $30, $15 or less to over 100 performances, live performances across our stages, across Chicagoland area. So a great time to take the entire family and enjoy different types of genres of show, music, dance, comedy, and just all the things that we have to offer in Chicago as artists on stage.
Yeah, there's a listing of all the shows that are participating at hottix.org, HOTTIX.org, to get the whole ball of wax on this. But this includes city theaters, suburban theaters. Everybody is pretty much involved in this, right?
Yes, we gear up for this all year. Each year, this is our 13th year doing this, so we're really excited to be bringing new stages and allowing people to explore different neighborhoods so that they can make a whole day of it. And this year, we're really excited to have some crossover with Restaurant Week, so you can make a whole night of supporting your local neighborhood theater and local restaurant.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? That Theater Week, Restaurant Week, these are opportunities to go to places where you would spend a lot more money any other time of the year to see a show or to have a great meal. It's a great opportunity to, you know, check out some shows you may have wanted to see. It's a great opportunity to expose your kids to live theater because there are also lots of children's shows that are involved in this as well, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. In Chicago, Children's Theater is one of them with the Magic City. That's a great one to check out. And they're in partnership with Manual Cinema. So you've got some paper cutouts, some puppetry. Ages 6+ is really great for the entire family.
Yeah, when I was looking down the list, the thing that jumped out at me because it's one of my favorite musicals, but really is perfect for the whole family, is Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat that's back. Out of
yes, that's the Marriott. Always a fun one.
Yeah, the Marriott.
Absolutely. It's great for the whole family. Actually, I did that one in high school, so it brought back some memories. And it's great for the family to have fun, and it's got some comedy in it, and it's very vibrant.
Yeah, I mean, really just wonderful songs, and it's big and colorful. And out at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire, it's done in the round. So it's, you know, you feel like the performers are, you know, arm's distance
right
from
there
you.
With you. Like you're up there with them, and you get to feel that. And I think theater is kind of the last form where you have that fear of missing out, right? Every night can be different depending on the audience and the people on stage, how they react off that energy. And so you can go to the same show multiple times and get a different feel.
Yep. Tell us about some of the other shows and theaters that are participating this year.
Oh, absolutely. So I know you mentioned Fat Ham over at Goodman, Betrayal also over at Goodman. If we have any Helen Hunt fans, that's got some big hitters on the stage, and so that's more serious play. We have Beautiful, the Carole King musical happening, as well as Waitress. So make sure you go and support your theaters that are out in the suburbs. Oil Lamp Theater as well, which is doing the complete works of Shakespeare Abridged. So if you're a Shakespeare fan, that's a great way to see all of them in one sitting. And then Frida at Writers Theater, where they're talking about the life of Frida Kahlo. So that is also a time to experience maybe some places outside of your own neighborhood. And then we've got some great shows happening right here in the city. The Cave at Red Orchid Theater, which talks about a family's move and transition and how they deal with that and how they readjust. We have a great show at Looking Glass Theater, which is reopening. I'm so excited for them tomorrow. They're doing their ribbon cutting ceremony because they are returning from the pandemic, so it's a great opportunity to support them. They're doing Circus Quixote, and if you've ever seen their ensemble and the work that they do, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. The Court Theater, A Raisin in the Sun, is classic.
Classic, yes.
Yeah, there are Theatros in Zani, which has been a smash here in Chicago for quite some time. You can get some discount tickets to go see and enjoy that. They're doing a Singing in the Rain concert at the Lyric.
Yes, at
Opera.
Lyric.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Where they're going to show the movie, the classic movie, but they have the Lyric Opera Orchestra, the live orchestra that'll play the score. And I'm such a big fan of anytime anybody does that, I'm such a big fan.
That's going to be such a unique experience. So I would highly encourage people go and check them out, as well as, Hubbard Street Dance is also participating, and the Laugh Factory, IO Theater, if you like improv. So we get to see some of that raw Chicago talent come to the stage before they, you know, before they get to be the big names that we know.
Right. I mean, you know, it's plays, live productions on stage, but it's also, as you had mentioned, several dance performances, this movie presentation of Singing in the Rain, but also live comedy is included in Chicago Theater Week, right?
Yes, so at Laugh Factory, but also Steppenwolf has a number of shows participating, so they're bringing back their Black Review. They have several shows in Chicago Theater Week as well, and so if you haven't been to the Second City, Steppenwolf as well, some of the classic names of theater that have that recognition worldwide, there's an opportunity to see those shows at accessible prices.
Yeah, IO Theater is, participating, the improv group. They're doing something called World News Tonight, WHIRLED, World News Tonight. So that should be a lot of fun. Now, you also have something going on called Chicago Theater Week Bingo. Can you explain what this is?
Absolutely. You'll be able to go online at ChicagoTheaterWeek.com, and you'll be able to download a bingo card. With this, we are doing a giveaway. So if you bring your ticket stub. The bingo board has things like go. I've seen a musical. I've seen theater in this neighborhood, or you get to go ahead and play the bingo card and then enter to win tickets and dinner out again. So you can continue the fun and joy of Chicago Theater Week even after it's over. So a lot of people participated last year, and it was so popular that we're bringing it back.
Yeah, really fun. A lot of good stuff. Now, people want to get info on Chicago Theater Week. I had mentioned hottix.org. Is that the best place to get information?
For the full list of shows, you can go to chicagotheaterweek.com. And so we have all the shows listed there, and they're updated for what's still available. And then also, come join us for our kickoff event this year on February 3rd. We'll be at Black Ensemble Theater at 5:30 p.m., where you get to get a little preview of some of the shows.
That'll be a lot of fun. Shows from lots of different theaters all being presented at Black Ensemble that particular night?
Yes, so that's going to be a fun night. This is our third year doing it, and we just like to introduce people to the league's membership, which is over 230 theaters, believe it or not, across Chicagoland area. So we're going to have a good time.
Yeah, would you say that the theater scene in Chicago is pretty much recovered from the pandemic? I mean, theaters everywhere, all across the country, were affected by this. Is Chicago theater back up and running, or well on its way to recovery? How would you describe it?
We're well on our way to recovery. I think it's important for people to please go see shows now, but also to make sure you're supporting your local neighborhood theater throughout the entire year. We want to make sure that the arts continues to be funded, and that these works, which bring so many people from different backgrounds together, continues to be supported, as well as the pay for our artists. And so when you go and buy a ticket, you really are supporting our full ecosystem. And Chicago theater is the best theater across the nation. So we really want to make sure we keep that spot.
Yeah. Somebody on our text line is saying, why are we mentioning shows that have been sold out for days and weeks during this? Well, we're mentioning all the shows so we can describe what Chicago Theater Week is. But often people don't show up for the shows. For one reason or another, there are often tickets which are still available. So that's why we're mentioning all the shows before you send your snotty text to us.
I'm glad people are so excited that they're online right now looking, and we do update the shows daily. We do get new inventory daily, so please continue to check in. And then also, keep up with us, because we've been known to do a little theater week continued once we get past the opening week, to see how many tickets we've sold. So keep up with League of Chicago Theaters and our announcements, but we do get new inventory daily. So I hope whoever that is, that they will be able to get into some of those shows.
Yeah, I hope so too. And also I hope they get some manners. Marissa Lynn Jones, Executive Director, League of Chicago Theaters. I hope you have a great Sunday today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. And I'll see you all in the audience soon.
Tomorrow is Holocaust Remembrance Day, the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. 80 years ago, but it, seems like yesterday. Doesn't seem like that long ago. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like we've gotten too far away from hate, that existed and continues to in many cases. So, it's a day of remembrance. And there's an interesting article that I was reading this morning that said that movies about the Holocaust don't do justice to what actually happened. We'll talk about that coming up in a few minutes. So, Shwani, happy Chinese New Year to you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Happy Lunar.
I guess that's the first I heard of it.
What, the Chinese New Year?
Yeah, well, the first I'd heard that this was the Chinese New Year coming
Wednesday.
Up.
Wednesday's actually.
Oh, Wednesday? Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to be making Chinese food on my TV cooking segment.
Well, I love it.
Yeah.
What are you making?
Dumplings.
Dumplings,
Chinese,
okay.
Chinese dumplings, because yeah. they're for good luck.
Mm-hmm.
And
you and I need all the help we can get.
That's so. I'm going to make about 10,000 of them. So hold on. That is actor Timothy Chalamet on Saturday Night Live last night. He was both the host and also the musical guest.
If I could only
he did a couple of Dylan-esque songs. Stayed away from the like the classic Dylan songs, which I sort of would have liked to have heard, but I like that he did, you know, some of these deep tracks, Schwani, as we call them, you know, in the radio biz.
That's right. The deep tracks on side two.
Some deep tracks on the B-side.
Of an album.
Yeah, man. This is called Tomorrow Is a Long Time. And he sounds great, doesn't he?
He sure does. Yeah.
Did you see this? Did you wind up seeing this movie?
What, The Complete Unknown?
I know you
Yeah,
wanted.
We saw it the week of Christmas. Oh, okay. It was great.
Yeah, he was, the movie is amazing. And he was nominated for an Oscar this week. The movie
should
was nominated.
Been.
The director, Edward Norton, was nominated for playing Pete Seeger in the movie. The actress, gosh, I'm forgetting her name now, Monica Barbara. I believe who
played Joan Baez.
Yeah, wasn't yeah. she great?
Yes, yes, indeed.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Voice like an angel.
Yeah,
she was so good. I mean, I'll bet it's going to do pretty well at the Oscars. Although this film, Emilia Perez, got the most nominations, which I thought was good. I didn't think it was, you know, like the best movie of the year, getting all these nominations. But it's going to be an interesting year at the Oscars this year. But anywho. That is Timothy Chalamet from last night. So interestingly, there's an article. I forget where I saw it online today. Yeah, you know, I'm so busy on the TikTok.
With your dance moves.
Oh, really?
I'm so busy doing.
And how does that happen?
I'm so busy doing challenges and taking pictures of my feet. Isn't that what you mostly do on TikTok?
Couldn't tell you.
No, I couldn't either because I've never been on it.
Oh, you'd enjoy it. You'd enjoy it. You get into one of those Andy Griffith algorithms. And suddenly you're just flooded with videos that you can't believe.
Can you imagine that on an Andy Griffith episode when Barney's all alone playing TikTok on his phone and Andy sneaks up behind him?
Yeah.
You know? What you doing, Barn?
I'm on the TikTok. And you see this new app called Nip It? Nip It in the bud. Nip It in the bud.
Well, I even got Otis to play along.
Jack, I'll meet you in the hallway, okay?
Otis and Barney on TikTok. That's a Saturday Night Live skit right there.
Oh, is it ever?
Oh, that's good.
We just wrote a Saturday Night Live skit for them. So anyway, I was on just like bouncing around, and I found this really interesting article that somebody had written. I'd mentioned to a Holocaust Remembrance Day tomorrow. And there was a writer who felt that the movies and entertainment in general, I guess it's mostly been movies, about the Holocaust, distorts the truth about what really happened during the genocide. Books, movies, and other entertainment about World War II and the Holocaust, oversimplifying what really happened under Nazi rule. And, you know, I guess that's, you know, you sort of have to expect that a little bit from a movie. You know, because they have, 2 hours to tell a story? 2-3 hours? I think Schindler's List might have been.
Schindler's List was 3 hours.
That was 3 hours. And there were certainly, I didn't think, I'm sure it didn't come close to the real horrific nature of what happened. But it was a pretty powerful movie, Schindler's List and others that have come along.
I walked out of that positively stunned.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunned.
I and half the theater, I distinctly remember this when Schindler's List was over. People just sat there. Even after the credits ended, the lights in the theater went on. People were just so stunned by what they had just seen. So I don't know how, unless you know, really present something on screen or in a book. I mean, books, you know, can be far more graphic than a movie or a TV series. But I don't know how you could possibly depict anything in a more realistic way than the many ways that we've already seen on television that they're really hard to watch, which doesn't mean we should purify what actually happened for it. But, I mean, there's only so much that you can put on the screen, right? And still have people engaged enough to continue to watch their movie and not turn it off. So I guess I kind of get what this writer is saying. The writer is somebody named Luke Berryman, and he makes some very good points about Americans' lack of knowledge about the Holocaust. There are 21 states that don't require that the Holocaust be taught in schools. I mean, there are lots of, you know, things, but the bottom line premise of this article that he wrote was Holocaust entertainment always oversimplifies the subject. And, you know, I don't know. I never felt like I was getting a washed down version of anything that I've ever seen that's on the Holocaust. I've always felt like it was powerful to the point where it haunted me afterwards. I can only imagine that somebody who actually went through it, it was obviously 10 times worse when you go through it than when you sit and read about it or watch a movie about it. But I don't think anybody whitewashed this in any way. I don't know. What do you think, Andy? Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, it's been a while since I've seen Schindler's List. Of course, I grew up hearing stories from people that had relatives that actually went through it. And then on a trip to Washington, D.C., I went to the museum.
Yeah.
And if you really want to be stunned and walk away shaking your head and just having a hard time imagining what actually happened, go do that.
Yeah.
Go to the, and there's the one in Skokie too. I haven't been to that one, but my parents have been through that one and they say that it's just as powerful. I don't know what it's like at the one in Skokie, but the one in Washington, D.C., you get handed a card at the beginning.
Oh, wow.
Of a person.
With a serial number on it.
And you don't find out till the very end if that person made it or not.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I felt the same way when we went through Dachau, one of the concentration camps in Germany. Leaving just, you know, absolutely beyond belief, feeling completely stunned, numb, beyond tears, beyond anger. It was just numbing, absolutely numbing.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't been to either of the museums. I've read about them and seen videos about them. I've gone to benefit dinners for the Skokie Holocaust Museum, where they show the exhibits and, you know, demonstrate the exhibit. You know, they show in a presentation form for these benefit dinners what they have on display there. And it's haunting to see it. And that's the point, right?
Yeah.
So we don't have to live through this again. So, you know, so never again will happen. Will never happen again. The point, though, of this article is that, you know, that movies, books, and what he calls entertainment pieces on the Holocaust, I don't know that there have exactly been entertainment pieces.
No.
But I don't get the whitewashing that this article talks about, or the dumbing down of it, because it's pretty powerful. It's pretty powerful. So tomorrow, think about it. Tomorrow is the 80th anniversary of when Auschwitz closed. Shwani, in all your world travel, have you gone to any of those Auschwitz or any of the?
Well, I just mentioned Dachau, which is in Germany. It's not all that far from Munich, and we were there in 2002. And first of all, it's there as a memorial. It's not there as something that, you know, you would be charged admission. You're not. You know, you park in the parking lot. But the first thing I remember is driving into the parking lot, and then, you know, 50-100 yards away, you're actually walking into the camp. The barbed wire is still there. The guard towers are still there. I had chills. Yeah. I just had chills.
I'm getting chills now with you just even saying.
And then when you walk in, how big it is. It's just a huge, huge complex. And we just were, like I said, we were numb and stunned when we walked out and we finished our time there. I was with my dad and my uncle, and they said that they remembered, of course, hearing about this, during the World War II years. And, being there was something that really, really brought it home for everybody. So the Dachau camp is the one I visited. I have not been to Auschwitz yet.
I would like to visit it, but I think it's going to be a little like when we visited Pearl Harbor.
Yes, that very, very serious, sobering effect.
Same kind of thing where you want to visit and pay your respects, but you know you're walking into some place where horrific tragedy took place. I think it would be like that, but one day I would like to visit. Some interesting thoughts on our text line on this from 773. I'm first generation born here in the U.S. My maternal grandmother and grandfather were in German work camps. My mother was born in the concentration camp. My grandmother was getting German reparations until she died at the age of 93. It's not that long ago. I mean, you know, it's our, Shwani, you and I are parents' generation.
Right.
That lived through
it. Right, right.
And as that generation is dying off, you know, we're losing firsthand eyewitnesses to this. But look at this. Here's someone whose grandmother and grandfather were in work camps and whose mother, you imagine, born in a concentration camp.
No, that's unimaginable.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
815 area code. I visited Dachau and I was stunned as well to think it was just closed 30 years before I was there. That's the thing that gets me with this. Is that it wasn't that long ago.
No, this isn't something 200-300 years ago. Yeah. This was still in, you know, in the times of, we have many people still alive that experience this. Mm. One more thing I want to add about the, since we're on this subject, one of the first reporters from the Allied forces to go in when the camps were being liberated was Edward R. Murrow.
Right.
He went in when he was doing radio to the camp in Buchenwald, which is in Germany. And you want a stunning account of what he saw? And his producer that was with him said that he came out and he was just white. He was absolutely, you know, just unbelievably shaken by what he saw.
Yeah. To see it in person, for sure. But again, getting back to this original article, we've mentioned Schindler's List, but there are lots of movies that depicted the horror of the Holocaust. I don't see the dumbing down or the oversimplification of what was depicted there. Here's a text from the 847 area code. I think it was the Ken Burns documentary on the Holocaust that had a person explaining the design and the building of the ovens and the gas chambers. It was so sad and scary and sickening. They referred to people as units. My heart shudders just thinking about it. So, again, not that long ago, my friends. Not that long ago. And, sadly, I'm not so sure that we've traveled that far. And, you know, the hate that people still feel for one another. Seems like we would have gotten past that. You go through something like that, and hopefully you learn from it. I'm not so sure that we did.
One thing you just mentioned about, you know, the phrase never again or never forget, There is a giant metal structure at Dachau as you leave. And in eight languages, it says never forget or never again when you leave there. So absolutely.
Yeah. Tons and tons of texts about this. Here's one from 773. I was at Auschwitz in 1978. I still have nightmares about it.
Mm-hmm.
The reality was so much worse than anything I learned in school. You know, so I don't know, maybe that reinforces what this article said about the oversimplification of seeing it in person and seeing it in a movie. You know, I guess in some ways I do understand that, but I still think you get the point that of the complete horror that took place in any of these entertainment pieces. So, all right. You have something to lighten the show up in the next half hour?
Well, we'll be talking about, here's some good news from Southern California. They've had some major rainfall.
Oh, that's good.
And that's helping there. Both the Palisades fire and the fire that broke out on Wednesday are now within containment range, 80% contained. So, you want a little bit of good, positive news out of a story that's been terrible. You know,
I did read this morning, you know, I've been only reading depressing things this morning, that there could now be, because of that rain, they could now be faced with
mudslides.
Well, mudslides and toxic ash.
Yes.
As a result of that.
That's right. That's right. Which is why they want people to wear masks there. Yeah. Because of that, the air being so thickened with the toxic stuff there.
Yeah. See, I read serious stuff, too.
Yeah, obviously you do.
I don't just sit around watching Three Stooges movies like some people on this show. All right, it's 11:38. And thank you for joining us on our little Sunday morning get-together here. We cover everything that's going on a Sunday morning. We've got all of our regular features, including our Dean's List, A-List, Interview with the Stars. We always feature the biggest A-listers in the world. And today, the star of the number one movie in America, Mr. Mark Wahlberg. Now, before we get to that, I wanted to go over the Academy Award nominations that just came out the other day. And it's a pretty artsy list of movies. I think this is going to be a very interesting year at the Academy Awards because there is an overflow of these artsy movies that not a lot of people go to see, frankly. That is often the case with the Academy Award. The film heads, as I call them, choose their favorite films and the mass population movies like Wicked, for example, or Deadpool and Wolverine are often completely overlooked. Not 100% overlooked in Wicked's case, but Amelia Perez, the non-English musical comedy, wound up getting the most nominations of any movie this year, 13 in all. In fact, it set a record for a non-English language movie being nominated. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and the movie Roma were the last ones to do that with 10 nominations apiece. But Amelia Perez got 13. Wicked and The Brutalist. Brutalist being that 3.5-hour movie that everyone is talking about. Got 10 nominations apiece. After that, it was the Bob Dylan movie, A Complete Unknown, and the drama Conclave after that with 8 mentions apiece. The films that were actually nominated for Best Picture included The Brutalist, A Complete Unknown, Conclave, Dune Part 2, Amelia Perez, I'm Still Here, Nickel Boys, The Substance, Wicked, and Anora. For Best Director, the nominees were Jacques Audiard for Amelia Perez, Sean Baker for Anora, Brady Corbett for The Brutalist, Coralie Farget for The Substance, and James Mangold for Complete Unknown. Now, everybody talks about the snubs, you know, in every category, and oftentimes that's just personal preference, but I don't know how you can have a movie like Wicked, which is a kaleidoscope of story, song, beauty, cinematography. It's got everything that you would want in a motion picture and does it on all cylinders humming. And the director, John M. Chu, not being directed. That is a complete, complete snub. And again, you know, to me, it's the Academy voters, many of which I believe just didn't even see all the Oscar-nominated movies this year because of the California wildfires. You know, who's got time to go watch movies when your house is burning down? Or who, you know, can go to a theater when your neighborhood is burning down? And that took place during the nomination process when people were supposed to be seeing these movies and voting on them to be considered for Oscar nomination consideration. There were too many other factors, I think, going on. So I think this is going to be a very skewed year. And the same thing probably is going to take place when it comes down to the actual Oscar voting. You know, people have other priorities with their homes and their personal lives this year, where a lot of the voting is going to take place in Southern California. The actors nominated for Academy Awards this year, Adrian Brody in The Brutalist, Timothy Chalamet in A Complete Unknown, Colman Domingo in the movie Sing Sing, Ralph Fiennes for Conclave, and Sebastian Stan plays a young Donald Trump in the movie called The Apprentice. For Best Actress in a Lead Role, Cynthia Erivo was nominated for Wicked, Carla Sofia Gascon in Emilia Perez, Mikey Madison in Anora, Demi Moore in The Substance, and Fernanda Torres for I'm Still Here. Now, I'm not even going to make predictions. I would never make predictions this early in the game anyway, because, you know, usually it's like a political contest. Who does the best ad campaigns? If you go out to Southern California, I don't know. It actually may be different this year because everything is different in Southern California this year. But normally when you're in Southern California this time of year, after the nominations come out, every billboard you see is for one of the nominated movies. It's a big-time campaign to try to get Academy voters to vote for their films. So I think to make a prediction this early in the game is premature. Emilia Perez got the most nominations, so I guess it's the front runner right now. I thought it was a good movie. I don't think it was an Academy Award-winning movie. I may wind up being 100% wrong. We'll find out about all that, and we'll see how the so-called campaigns shake out between now and March 2nd. That's when the Academy Awards will be given out this year. Conan O'Brien is the host of the Academy Awards show this year. And, you know, how they present this show, given the wildfires, how they present a show that's filled with tinsel and glitter and Hollywood lightness amidst all the tragedy that's gone on out there, yet to be seen. So we'll see what's going on. In the meantime, with all these artsy films and foreign language films and, you know, these fancy schmancy films that are getting Oscar nominations, comes this movie that's called Flight Risk. It's 90 minutes long. It's in many ways very predictable. It stars Mark Wahlberg. It's directed by Mel Gibson. And it's a thriller action movie. And it's the number one movie. It beat all the Oscar-nominated films at the box office this weekend. I talked with the star of the movie, Mark Wahlberg, and we'll hear from him next. 11:49. I believe I see some sunshine outside. How about that? It'll be a good-looking Sunday, at least anyway. Still a little chilly. Shawnee will give us the latest news, sports, weather, traffic, everything we need in a couple of minutes. Get into our food time segment in a few minutes as well.
But the biggest A-listers in the world every Sunday morning. And today, Mark Wahlberg, our longtime friend who we talked to via Zoom on the WGN-TV morning news on Friday morning about his new movie called Flight Risk. It is a thriller action movie. It's 90 minutes long, very quick, very compact, very high action, directed by none other than Mr. Mel Gibson, who is an Oscar-winning director for Braveheart. He's given us a lot of movies. The man is a good actor, and he's a very good director as well, and has given us now this movie about a U.S. Marshal who is escorting a prisoner back to, I think it was New York City, to face charges for embezzlement. They charter a plane to take the prisoner back from Alaska to, I'm pretty sure it's New York. And it turns out that the pilot of the plane, played by Mark Wahlberg, turns out that he's got a few little surprises of his own. I don't want to tell you too much of what goes on. I will tell you that the U.S. Marshal in this movie is played by Michelle Dockery from Downton Abbey. The prisoner is Topher Grace, who you know probably best from that 70s show. But it's, you know, there are problems. There's a few problems with the movies. It's a little bit predictable at times. The dialogue is a little thin at times. But the performances, especially Mark Wahlberg's, is pretty intense. And you want to go see just a really good, you know, action thriller popcorn movie is what I call them. You know, it's loaded with a ton of action. And, you know, I wound up giving it a Dean's List C, which is a good grade. You know, I think it's an average film and one that I would recommend that you go check out. But we had a nice conversation about the film, about working with Mel Gibson, about Mark Wahlberg's physical appearance in the movie. He actually shaved his head to look like a bald guy, something that a lot of us didn't have any choice in. He actually shaved a perfectly good head of hair to look like a bald guy in the movie, and that's getting a lot of attention right now. Our one-on-one A-list interview with Mark Wahlberg.
And our longtime pal, Mark Wahlberg, joins us this morning. Hello there, my friend.
How are you, sir? Nice to see you.
Good to see you, too. So congratulations on this. Talk to me a little bit about the Mel Gibson experience. He's an Oscar-winning director, you know, and it's got to be kind of a different experience for you as an actor, I would think.
Absolutely. I mean, being an actor first, obviously he creates an environment for you to be at your most comfortable and your most creative. He and I have worked together on a number of occasions, but always as actors. So every time I worked with him, whether it was on Daddy's Home or Father Stu, I was constantly picking his brain and trying to entice him to hire me as an actor while he was in the director's chair. And I finally got my opportunity here.
Yeah, now you usually, you know, play the hero, the good guy. This is a complete turn for you, isn't it, in this one?
Yeah, which I loved. I think even in the beginning of the movie, I'm kind of playing this all shucks kind of guy. You think, well, at some point I'm going to figure out how to save the day and land the plane safely. But, you know, it takes a nice twist pretty quickly, and it was a lot of fun playing this role. I've always gravitated, especially when watching movies, rooting for a great villain, whether it be Cape Fear or, you know, The Shining, so many other movies that I've that have starred actors who I've adored and watched and, you know, love those kind of parts.
Now, what's so interesting to me, you know, with the plot and the filming of this movie, all the elements, all that anyone is talking about is that you shaved your head and you became like me in this, you know, willingly you became bald. In this movie.
A better-looking version of you.
A much better, much better-looking version. He's clearly taking care of himself. Are you surprised at the reaction that that's getting?
No, I always thought it would be really cool. You know, you look at the Robert Duvall's, my dad, all of these people that I know that have embraced losing their hair and keeping what they have left on the sides and on the top. And I just thought it would be interesting switch to kind of start out with this Southern accent. All of a sudden, you realize he's a kind of New York mob hitman. And then, you know, the hat with the hair attached to it was just another little twist. I had actually pitched a number of other times on other films. And Mel was the first one who thought it was a good idea. So there you go.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you can't take your eyes off it. I will say that when you're watching the movie, because it's so, you know, I've never seen you like that before. It's a first for Mark Wahlberg, right?
Yeah, and I think also, you know, it gives you license to get a little bit more crazy, you know, to take a few more risks. And you know, for a role like this, when in a movie that's so contained, you need to really have lots of fun, and it's all about the character. So I thought, why not?
Love that. So you star in this movie with Michelle Dockery, who we know as Lady Mary from Downton Abbey. You know, very elegant, very proper, but she like holds her own against you in some pretty intense fight scenes in this very small, confined area.
Yeah, she's a very formidable opponent. What a wonderful talent. I actually saw the movie last night in 4DX, and I strongly recommend if you get a chance to see the movie in 4DX, it's like nothing ever. It's redefined the cinematic experience for me. It really has.
Yeah,
she's wonderful. Topher's great, you know, in the part of Wilson as well.
That's where your seat moves and you're moving like in sync with all the action, right?
Oh my gosh, it's snowing. There's smoke.
Yeah, you
wind,
get like pelted,
shot,
right?
There's thick whip flying. Yeah, all it's right. Incredible.
Oh, that sounds cool.
It is called Flight Risk. It opens in theaters everywhere today. Always good to chat with Mark Wahlberg. Thanks, pal. Nice to talk to you.
It's a pleasure, Dean. Thank you, sir.
There you go. Mark Wahlberg talked with him Friday morning on the WGN TV Morning News. And just for the record, this 4D that he's talking about, where when you go to see a movie and the seat is moving in sync with the action on the movie, and you feel wind in your face, and if you drive through a puddle, you get sprayed with water, and, you know, it's like a full sensory experience. I, for one, hate it. I hate 4D. I find it incredibly distracting. If I'm on a plane that's got a lot of turbulence, I pretty much can get the sense of what's going on simply by looking at it on the screen. I don't need to be brought to a sense of nausea by having the seat moving and turning side to side and being jostled all over the place. So I'm glad Mark Wahlberg likes it. I, for one, would take a big old pass on the 4D. Did I hear news out of Sox Fest that they're going to put up a statue for Mark Burley?
That's the truth.
Are there statues already outside whatever
it's
White
called
Sox
Rate,
Park is
called
this week?
Field now, yeah. There's a Harold Baines statue inside the ballpark. Carlton Fisk has a statue. I can't remember who else, but it's kind of become commonplace for organizations. You know, the Cubs just did it recently with Ryan Sandberg, and of course there's a Santo statue, Harry Carey, Billy Williams, Fergie Jenkins, Ernie Banks.
I just didn't know that there were any on the south side.
Yeah, there's some out there.
I don't go there as much.
Yeah. But
you know who I'd like to see a statue of?
Who's that?
The guy sitting right next to you.
Really?
Schwanee.
The award, I'm not sitting right next to
the award winner?
A statue of me?
I'd like to see a Schwanee statue.
What pose would you like to see that statue in?
No, don't even
offense,
go there.
Offense, defense, special teams?
Those weren't the positions I was thinking of, but nonetheless. All right, here we go. Thank you for all the lovely texts and emails. People that wake up on Sunday morning and can't wait to hear what foolishness we're getting into around here today. We specialize in that here on the old Sunday morning show.
Every Sunday morning when before I come in, I think to myself, what kind of trouble are we going to get into today?
What kind of malarkey
what
are we going
to get into? What mischief will we make?
And how quickly into the show will it happen?
We appreciate all the nice people. People really seem to enjoy this show for some reason.
for some reason. Yes, they do. They do. And for which we really are grateful.
We are.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you got a bunch of nice ones.
Yeah, a lot of people saying how much they enjoy the show. They stop what they're doing. They're sitting. They sit in their car. They get their driveway and they sit in their car because they don't want to miss anything. So thank you. It's very nice.
Because you're looking for all the ones that just talk about you. Yeah. Yes. They don't mention Andy and I. They're just about you.
No, actually, you know what? Almost everyone mentions us as
the three of us. Yeah,
as a collective,
as a group. Yeah.
I wish they would only mention me.
See, I knew we were going to dip.
But they,
somewhere along the line, that was going to be worked.
Those
in
are the
there.
Ones that I delete. But no. Earlier in the show, we were talking about things that happened on this day in history.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, I can't believe it's 39 years since Super Bowl 20.
Ask Bears fans; it seems like 60.
Well, given what we've gone through since
there
then.
There has been a little bit of a drought. Yes.
Okay, now, here's one quick thing, if I may. A lot of people don't recall, or maybe they've forgotten, that we went to the Super Bowl one time afterwards.
2007.
Yeah.
Dave Ennett and I were there in the pouring rain in Miami, watching Billy Joel do the national anthem and Prince do the halftime show. I'm mentioning the highlights of that day.
Yeah, nothing football related.
Well, there was only one. That was the Devin Hester return for a touchdown on the opening kick. And then it went quickly downhill from there.
Yeah. Head coach, Lovie Smith.
Correct. Quarterback, Rex Grossman.
Well, that team for Super Bowl 20,
mm-hmm.
that was a remarkable team in the history of football.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are those in the know that feel that that was the best defensive squad ever assembled in the National Football League. And you'd have a hard time really arguing it position by position. Hall of Famers, Pro Bowl players, what they were able to accomplish. And, they shut out both of their opponents in the playoffs until they got to the Super Bowl in the division round and then also the NFC Championship game. They pitched shutouts at Soldier Field against the Rams and the Giants. And how fitting was it? It was a 46-10 win over the Patriots because it was all about the 46 defense.
Yeah. 39 years ago. Unbelievable.
Crazy.
Where does the time go?
I don't know.
Also, on this day in 1967, the famous big snow took place. 23 inches of snow fell on Chicago. And you know what I found? I was looking around, and I found, remember those old newsreels that they used to, I guess they used to show them at movie theaters?
I have a vague memory of seeing them at the Lands Theater in Lansing, yes.
I don't ever remember seeing them. Well, maybe I do.
Just one or two.
Maybe when I was a little kid. Those were on the way out when we were growing up. Because we had to get to, the absent-minded professor and son of Flubber.
And don't forget the cartoons beforehand.
And the cartoons. Love me a Pink Panther cartoon.
Pink Panther and Looney Tunes.
But I found a newsreel about the big snow of 67 that I guess these were shown in theaters. I honestly don't really know.
Yeah, they were.
But I love, let me play this. It's less than a minute long. But I love the dramatic music and the way the announcer is, describing what was happening. This is Universal Pictures newsreel from 1967 on the big snow, the blizzard, the worst blizzard in 18 years in Chicago.
The windy city of Chicago is white as well as windy. Battered by a furious winter storm which dumped 2 feet of snow across the Midwest, 68 deaths were traced to the blizzard. 10-foot drifts were a common sight after the 29-hour snowfall which brought this giant city to a standstill. Some 10,000 cars, buses, and trucks were abandoned on the streets and highways. Train and airline operations were halted, some for several days. There was widespread looting, and many fires broke out. Helicopters flew emergency missions with food, drugs, and blood supplies. Milk, bread, fuel, and mail deliveries were all stopped by the snowstorm, described as one of the biggest and worst of the century. It reduced Chicago to a toddling town, indeed.
about this music.
And now you get into the circus.
I was going to say, Bozo Circus came on next,
I love that. I want to use that music on the show. That's fantastic.
That's good stuff.
But the urgency of that announcement.
You know what, though? You can almost visualize the images that he's describing there when you listen to it, because it's so up, you know, so intense and
it's
dramatic.
The worst blizzard of 18 years in Chicago.
A toddling town, indeed.
They couldn't wait to read that. Man, oh, man. Do you remember looting that took place? I'm not surprised, I guess. But,
I don't offhand, of course.
I don't remember that.
You know, the looting, of course, during a year later in 1968 with Martin Luther King's assassination and the summer riots. But not so much the looting, but seeing images on TV of, you know, stranded buses like he was talking about, and the vehicles and people not being able to get out of their driveways at all. Everything being shut down in the city. I don't necessarily remember the looting, though.
Yeah, I we were talking earlier, and I remember going to the store with my sled, because that's the only way that you could get anywhere. I would go, and I'd have to get milk and bread, if you could find it. The store shelves were empty.
They were.
You know, there was a, you know, the trucks couldn't get to the grocery stores to provide food to anybody. I remember that. I remember all the neighbors were helping, shoveling the sidewalks and the streets and parking places and all this and that.
That's when neighbors took care of neighbors.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I think in, you know, when it comes down to, you know, catastrophes, I think neighbors,
they still step up. Yes.
I think so. I think we see that in California where the wildfires.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, people are helping each other. It's just here that where you shovel out a parking space and call dibs on it, that somebody will steal your parking place.
With a big chair or a sofa in the parking
space. Big lazy boy recliner out there holding your spot. But I just wanted to open up the phone lines, because when we talked about this earlier, everybody came out like crazy on the text line saying what they remember best from the big snow. Let me open up the phone lines. I would love to reminisce a little bit with you. 312-981-7200. Andy wasn't born yet, right? Andy was...
Yeah, my mom was pregnant with me. I was born in May of that year.
Yeah, okay. So you were in the oven.
Correct. So I don't remember any of it firsthand.
Yeah. So it's only old people like Schwani and me that remember.
That was in sixth grade.
Yeah. I think I was about, I think more or less I was too. Something like
they let us go from school early that day because the snow was coming down very, very quickly. I mean, it was like we had 10 inches in 2 or 3 hours.
I think they let us go.
We went home early that day.
You know what I remember is they served us hot chocolate at school.
Mm.
They never did that.
You never had hot chocolate at school?
Nah, I don't think so.
We had it every once in a while. Days like that, we did.
N-E-S-T-L-E-S.
Nestle's makes the very best chocolate.
Well, hopefully no snow for us, at least not in the volume that we got in 1967 on this day. 23 inches of snow that fell. What are your memories of the so-called big snow? Let's go to Tom up first at 312-981-7200. Tom, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hey, hello, Dean. Thanks for taking my call. I recall at the time we lived at 9730 Greenwood across from the Schmidt School. My dad was on Squad 5 CFD, and his car was, we didn't see him for days. They were on a call and whatever, almost a week, but he was dropped off by a rig.
Oh boy, our phone jump out? We didn't get the end of that story. Hopefully we'll be able to reestablish connection. Gloria, are you there?
I'm here.
Hello, you're on WGN.
Yes, hi Dean. I've been waiting for you to talk about this snowstorm. You always seem to hit the later ones. I was a freshman in college at the time.
All right.
And it was the end of the quarter, and I had a friend that was going to drive me home, and it started snowing. We were at DePaul University on the north side, the north campus.
Oh, boy.
And another friend asked for if we could take her home. Well, she lived way south side, like 79th and Kedzie.
Okay. That's a long, so that was a long drive in a storm like that.
Yes, and we had we had never seen anything like that.
Right,
and,
right.
Oh, I mean, we were sliding all over. There were cars sliding all over in the middle of the street when we finally got Kathy, the other one, home. And then I lived in Bridgeport, so we had backtrack.
Oh, my gosh. We went back north again then.
Yes, back to 32nd and Morgan around there.
Right.
So then we parked the car. My friend Angie parked the car, and we went upstairs. She was going to take a break, and then she wanted to drive back home, which was the north side.
Oh,
like,
boy.
Yeah. Well, my dad said to her, "You're not going anywhere, lady."
Yeah.
And so she stayed in. Well, the next morning, we get somebody knocking on the door. She had left the car running all night.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
And the car was completely covered in snow.
Of course.
But
was it still running?
Yeah. It was. We must have stopped for gas or something.
Guess so. I thought the payoff of your story was going to be you couldn't find the car the next day because it was buried in snow, which it sounds like it was, but I would have never guessed that the car was running all night.
I know that was the weird thing, and it was just so funny. And and then, like I said, everything, we had never seen snow like that. And but wow, did we see cars all over? I can't believe that we drove through. We were so stupid.
I cannot believe that you were able to get around because so many of the streets were closed and blowing and drifting was blocking streets and cars were being abandoned and everything. You guys must have been resourceful in your driving to be able to scoot around like that. Look what a great story you got to tell though.
Well, thank you. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to. I listen to you all the time, have been for years. I'm going to turn 80 this year.
God bless you. Good for you. Well, I'm glad you're listening. I really appreciate it. Early happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Hi, Mel. You're on WGN.
Hi. How are you?
Very well.
So Chicago Public Schools used to start classes in January and go for a year, and then they would go from freshman to sophomore, et cetera, in January. Well, they stopped that practice, and the last evening or time that high school, was to graduate mid-year, they called it, was the night of that snowstorm. So on Wednesday night, Taft High School, we had 146 students sitting out there in the auditorium at a graduation practice, and the principal got up and swore up and down that if we didn't show up tomorrow night, we would not graduate. Half the students showed up. I was one of them. Family drove as close as they could. I think we parked a block away from Taft High School, and we walked down the middle of the street in the ruts and there, graduated. But every time we hear about the story of the great snowstorm of Chicago, it reminds me of the night I graduated high school.
Of course, of course. I cannot believe that the principal insisted that you be there after a storm like that.
Hey, that was days when everybody listened to what the principal had to say.
You didn't question authority back then. These days,
you did not. Absolutely did not.
These days, they put the guy in jail for suggesting such a thing. That's wild. But again, got a great story out of the deal. So there you go.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mel. Appreciate the call. Here's another from 847. I wasn't born yet. I was born in 1969, but heard stories from my older sisters and parents. My sisters remember being pulled on a sled by my dad to go to the Jewel on Oakton and Costner here in Skokie, a mile away. Mom didn't drive, but helped to push cars out with my downstairs neighbor's wife, who did drive. There were people who were scared to move their cars out, so my mom and neighbor helped out. Snowplows waited at one end of the street, or maybe the neighbors who were scared to move their cars talked to them and made them stop. I do remember that, you know, neighbors. I remember when she said walking in the tire tracks. I do remember that, walking in the street and the very, very narrow tire tracks. And I remember, you know, neighbors helping neighbors, trying to dig their cars out, pull their cars out. That was
push them down the street. Yeah,
to get them to. I don't know where they were going because everybody was.
Couldn't move very far.
Yeah, I was very chomped up. Anyway, we'll get to some more calls in just a minute after a quick check of WGN News. But as you see, 12:37, the 6 o'clock Dean Richards Sunday morning, WGN. Remembering the big snow of 67 today. 23 inches of snow dumped on Chicago. This was one of the top songs on the radio that year. The Monkees. Daydream Believer. Oh, yeah, I clearly remember a grade school dance. All the boys on one side, all the girls on the other, nobody wanting to dance with the other. But that was the year, 1967, when the big snow happened. What do you remember most from that storm? Linda, hi, you're on WGN.
Well, hi. How are you guys?
Doing very well. Thank you for calling.
Nice. I have two stories. One, my mom used to work for like a small mom and pop deli grocery.
Yeah.
And she was about two blocks. That store was about two blocks from Cicero Avenue. And with the store, she would walk to the Cicero Avenue mm-hmm. and get the milk delivery.
Sure.
And then on the way back to the store, people were coming up to her and they would buy it. So she never ever got the milk back to the store.
Back to the store, people were buying it off the wagon or whatever. Was it a wagon or a sled or how did she get it?
Unfortunately, I don't remember that part.
Yeah, because that was a challenge, getting things from one place to the other. Because cars, trucks, nobody could get things to where they needed to be. And often they would be put on sleds. Because that was the only thing, their toboggans. Those were the only things that were moving in the streets with all that much snow on the ground. What was your other story?
I could also see them using like cardboard boxes.
Yeah, right. Cardboard and pulling it on the snow, right?
Yep.
What was your other story?
The other story is the kids' story is our house was shaped like an L, and where the two parts meet, the wind comes from the south and the west. So that blew lots and lots of snow. And we were able to do two things with it all built up way above our heads. We were able to make what we called an igloo.
Yeah.
And then we also made a slide against the house.
Of course you did.
So, yeah. And I was the oldest at, so I was 10. And so we were like 10, 9, and 5 playing out there all day.
And probably you weren't like, sliding down the drifts, right?
Yep. Yep. And of course, we made it higher. We kept putting more up there.
Naturally. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the igloo, I think we built, now that you mentioned it, I think we also built an igloo when we were kids. Linda, I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. Here's one from the 708. During that snowstorm, my grandfather had a serious medical emergency and had to get to the hospital. Since we were two blocks off the main street, the ambulance couldn't get through. They had to come through with a snowmobile and a toboggan slide to put him on it to get him to the ambulance, which was blocks away. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about, that motor vehicles couldn't get through. So sleds and so forth are how you move things around, including medical emergencies, apparently. Hey, Jim, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hi, Dean. How are you?
Great.
I just remember I was a freshman in high school. I was going to DePaul Academy, which was in Lincoln Park campus. It's no longer there. And I lived at Chicago and Pulaski. And back then, there were trolley buses. So So you had the trolleys up on the electrical lines.
Yeah.
And we finally got to a point where we couldn't go any further. And, you know, being a freshman, I probably didn't have the right clothing on. I ended up having to walk home probably over 2 miles to get to my house. And the interesting thing, when you think about it, is your parents didn't even know where you were.
Right.
No phones, no cell phones.
Right.
And, you know, I probably got home and my mother's probably said, well, where you been? And go outside and shovel snow.
Right, right.
Was, you know, back then with no. And then in February, less than a month later, the Tribune, and I still have a copy of it, the Tribune put out an insert, a magazine,
yeah,
in their paper, and it's just called The Big Snow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's got all of these pictures of how it looked down the streets at O'Hare Airport in the parking lot. There's one here on Michigan Avenue, just deserted.
Yeah.
It's really a cool little magazine.
Like kind of a gray and blue magazine-ish kind of thing?
Yeah, blue. I actually texted a picture to you. It's got big snow
yeah.
and the cover of it, and it's just completely, all these cars abandoned. I don't even know what the street was,
yeah.
but I still have it.
I actually have one, too. I have one.
Cool.
I have one in my basement, you know, because, you know, you saved it because you thought, you know, this is history that was being made, and it certainly was.
Exactly.
Appreciate the call. Thank you so much. Have a great day, Jim.
You too. Thank you.
Here's 773 area code. Hey, Dean, my brother is still looking for his Corvair Monza that was lost in the 1967 snowstorm. All right, if anybody sees a Corvair Monza out there, let us know.
To get started, that's mypremisehealth.com.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Another one of those songs that was on the top of the charts. The year that we're talking about, 1967. The anniversary of the big snow in Chicago today. 23 inches of snow. Yeah, it was windy, all right. The snow drifts were, I don't know, 10, 12 feet high. It was amazing. It was an amazing thing to live through. If you weren't old enough to actually see it. Sharon, how about you? What do you remember?
Oh, it's seared in my memory. But thank you for taking my call. I love the show, and I'm not in town in the winter, but I listen to you on my iPad.
Nice. Where do you go in the winter?
I'm in Collier County in Bonita Springs in the Naples area.
Nice. Very nice.
I kind of go back and forth. I mean, I love Illinois.
Are you there now?
I can't be away from
you there now?
I'm here right now. And it's the first day I didn't have the heat on in weeks.
Nice.
So,
that's so nice.
It's been cold down here. But nothing like that day in January
67.
Right. My husband and I were pregnant and expecting our fourth child.
Wow.
He got snowed in at his work at the plant in Franklin Park. We lived in unincorporated Palatine. No one could get in. I went into labor with three little ones.
Oh, wow.
And I was by myself.
Oh, my gosh.
And I called my neighbor on landline, of course. And
yeah.
She said, you know what, Cher, I can help you. I can get you a newspaper and a scissors and a shoestring to tie the cord. I'll take the kids. But I can't, you know, you'll have to deliver the baby yourself.
Oh, my gosh.
I know, it was kind of scary to say the least because my husband didn't get home for days. But long story short, the labor stopped. It was false labor. And I finally did have my beloved fourth daughter, who's fabulous, on Valentine's Day. So,
oh, wow. So it was quite a while after.
It was an adventure.
Yeah, it was a couple of weeks after that. How terrifying to think.
Oh, I know. And my neighbor's husband actually put on snowshoes. I don't know why he had them.
To help deliver the baby?
No, he went to town to buy us milk and butter and eggs.
I thought he was going to help deliver the baby. I thought
he was buying his wife's cigarettes.
Of course. Of course. I have to get the essentials. A woman's about to have a child. We better get some bread, milk, and smokes.
We called the paramedics, but they said they couldn't get to us. Yeah. And it took about 3 days for my husband to get home. And wow. He had to park at a hotel nearby. There used to be a hotel by the Arlington Park Hilton Hotel by the racetrack years ago. He finally got that far and was able to park in that parking lot and then walk home.
And then walk the rest of the way. Wow.
No, yeah. That was my adventure, and I'll never forget it. But I love the show. You two are amazing.
Thank you. That's very nice
of
you.
And I'm a WGN girl. Back in the days when we used to travel with Roy and Sheila Leonard to London every other year and all the wonderful trips.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Some good memories.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing that. We've had a lot of people on our text line telling I had a baby during the snowstorm stories on the text line. A lot of people said that, you know, that they had the baby during the storm at home. They had to do it really au naturel. Others, somehow made it to the hospital. Here's 1-847 area code. I was due with my first child on that day. I was up all night watching the snow come down. At the end of the week, I had to go to the doctor for a checkup. We lived in Edison Park and had to drive to Broadway and Irving Park. The side streets were full of snow up to the roofs of the parked cars. You couldn't get through. I got out of the car and fell in the snow and couldn't get up. Wow, pregnant. How about that? Lots of stories like that of, babies that were born during all of that. Let me see here. Let me go to Larry. I appreciate you hanging on. Larry, you're on WGN.
Yeah. Hi, Dean. Boy, my story's kind of tame compared to some of these others.
Yeah, right. If you weren't delivering a baby, I don't want to hear your story. No, just kidding. Right. Just kidding. Go ahead.
At the time, we lived just off on the northwest side, just off Central and Lawrence, and I worked downtown. And fortunately, a coworker drove me up to Lawrence, dropped me off on her way home, and I walked over to the eastern terminal of the Lawrence bus, and the driver commented that I was very fortunate, as this was going to be the last bus operating on Lawrence. And my one memory on one of the memories is on Friday afternoon, my brother and I walked north on Central to the Kennedy Expressway, and got there about 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon, and there was not a single car on the expressway as far as you could see. He walked down halfway down on the ramp and I took a picture of him, and just as we were about to leave, a single vehicle came by going west on the eastbound lanes. That was the only vehicle.
Wow.
And on Lawrence Avenue, we could see Lawrence out the window. No traffic at all until Sunday morning. And then a milk truck pulled into the Chulasco across the street at that intersection. And it was just surrounded by people wanting to buy milk.
Right.
It was quite a sight.
Well, you know, think about that, too. These stories of people who didn't even wait for the product to get into the store. You know, they were trying to buy it right off of the truck. These were in the days before everybody had credit cards and, you know, things like that. So, you know, you had to show up with cash to get the stuff off of the trucks back then.
Unless they offered it for nothing. Oh, and I might also add, I've got those newspapers in my basement, too, the ones that you've got.
Yeah. Yeah, I think everybody had a copy of that commemorative Tribune magazine section that they put out. That was a big deal when that first came out. Appreciate the call, Larry. Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
You too. Hopefully we won't have to deal with that kind of snow for a while. Here is a text. Let me see here. 127, 1967 was my 18th birthday. Everyone remembers my birthday. Yeah, I guess so. If you were born on that day or that happened to be your birthday, of course, everyone's going to remember it all. Let's go to Rich next. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hi, Dean. How you doing?
Great.
I was listening and someone jogged a memory for me of that day. I was a little kid when that happened, and there were snowbanks built up on walls, on buildings, and there was a giant snowbank that I took the liberty of sliding down with, and I was wearing those back in the day. Remember the galoshes that?
Sure, with the clasps on them, the metal.
Yeah,
the
like
metal
20 clasp. Of them that went up your leg,
right.
Yes. And you couldn't get your shoes off.
That's right.
You have to put baggies on your shoes to get them.
Half an hour to put them on, half an hour to take them off, right?
Yeah, and as a little kid, it was a nightmare. Your parents force you to wear them.
Of course.
Ruin your shoes. Yeah, but those seem to be good for sliding down. So they work for sliding. So
sure,
I slid down like what seemed like a mountain of snow as a little kid. And I ran face first into as I came down the snow, the hill. I went face first into a door handle of a car.
Oh, geez. Oh, my gosh.
And it just missed my eye.
Oh, wow.
And because it was cold out, and there were no mirrors, really, that I was able to, look at. I was with other kids, and it started bleeding, but I couldn't feel it because it was, really cold. And, people were looking at me, ghastly. It's like, what?
Jeez.
Ended up wiping it off, but to this day, I have that scar.
You have a scar from remembering the storm.
It literally is at the corner of my eye. You can't really see it just because it's right, where your eye.
Right.
Yeah, but it's still there,
So anytime you want to remember the big snow, all you have to do is look in a mirror, right?
That's right. Yeah.
That's funny.
Rich, yeah, anyway,
I appreciate the call. Thank you so much. Thank you all for your memories of this. I'm telling you what, it was a historic day in Chicago if you weren't around for it. Those are the days when you feel, some community.